Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mike Florio.
Let's bring in Mike Florio here. Joins us on the program.
NBC Sports.
All right, Florio, I know you're probably busy.
Pro Football Talk.
Starts the day, he ends the day with Pro Football Talk. He is Mike Florio.
Within moments, a long national nightmare is apparently coming to an end.
I don't know what you're talking about.
If Justin Fields can't beat out Andy Dalton, what the hell were they doing trading up from 20 to 11 to get him?
Go to hell with your big brain. Ladies and gentlemen, Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi.
How are you, Mike?
On the Score.
A lot going on in football right now. That's why we talked to Mike Florio. He is at Pro Football Talk. He is with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sportsbook. Mike, as you can imagine, we're dealing with some pretty heavy stuff regarding the release of the Jenner and Block private inquest into the Blackhawks and their video coach, Brad Aldrich. I also noticed the crossover in NFL circles with people who are rightfully calling for a full release of the Washington football team's similar report, and the NFL saying, well, we can't protect enough anonymity. Well, this Blackhawks report tells me, yes, you can. Do you think that there will be any effect from one to the other?
Well, I need to take a look at the Blackhawks report. I have pointed out that the Andrew Cuomo report that was released at some point after the original Washington football team investigation results but not findings were released, that it's very easy to protect someone's anonymity. You redact their names. And the NFL has never said how many of these current or former employees wanted anonymity. Is it two? Is it three? Is it 20? Is it all of them? They have never explained whether or not these folks have requested this blanket, I'll only cooperate with you if you promise to make everything secret. There's a sense in my mind that the NFL is just using this notion that they're protecting the innocent victims of workplace misconduct as a way to hide the information. And I firmly believe that if the information came public, if the facts came public on which these conclusions were based, that it would be untenable for Daniel Snyder to continue as the owner of the team.
You mentioned Daniel Snyder, and last week we talked about the idea of somehow these documents in the email scandal could be released via some sort of governmental transaction or act. And Cody Benjamin reported last week, shortly after we talked, about how sources say the U.S. House of Representatives Oversight Committee is now looking into the email scandal. And the committee issued a letter to Roger Goodell on Thursday requesting info on the Washington football team investigation. Do you know anything further about that part of this?
Well, the letter is out there for anyone to review, and there is a long list of information that they're requesting. I thought it was interesting to see the NFL's response from both Thursday night and the commissioner yesterday. The idea that we look forward to communicating with the House Oversight and Reform Committee. Well, that's not we fully intend to cooperate. That's not we'll answer all questions they have. We just look forward to it. I'm sure they do look forward to that experience, but it all comes down to how motivated that committee will be. If they don't get voluntary cooperation, will they issue subpoenas? Should a subpoena be issued to Beth Wilkinson, the lawyer who conducted the investigation? I think that there's a potential fight here, and the NFL may end up engaging in what the judge in St. Louis, who's presiding over the Rams relocation litigation recently called a game of three card Monty that the NFL may be trying to play. They're not going to let this information out there. I was just talking to somebody about it a little bit ago, and look, they're hiding something big. They're not going through all these maneuverings over something that is meaningless or trivial. They're hiding something big, and they are determined to not let it out. And hopefully Congress will push for the truth.
Wait a second. What, you're almost implying that they wouldn't comply with a subpoena if that's the case. And they'll think they are above the law.
Well, I mean, look, well, Steve Bannon's not complying with the subpoena, so you're held in contempt of Congress. What does that even mean? I think that and they'll probably be more artful than just throwing up a wall and not showing up. But, you know, they didn't comply with a court order. In the Rams relocation litigation, there was a court order for several owners to submit personal financial information that could support an award of punitive damages, and they didn't comply. And that's why the judge said they're playing a game of three-card Monty, and the judge fined them. Now, it wasn't a huge amount of money, but the judge found they violated a court order. So I think they'll do whatever they have to do. I think that they, until the consequences of failure to comply will be worse than the consequences of complying, they'll do it. And I think what they're ultimately trying to do is protect Dan Snyder from having to sell the team. Because, and this isn't about protecting Snyder. They don't particularly like Snyder. This is about protecting the other 31 oligarchs. This is about preventing a chapter and verse description of what went haywire in the Washington football team organization from being published so that employees of the other teams won't look at it and say, well, hey, I deal with that every day. Well, maybe I have a claim. Maybe there's something going on here that needs to be investigated. They're trying to prevent this from becoming a precedent, from becoming a trend where people can make accusations that end up potentially bringing down an owner and forcing him or her to sell. I'm convinced that's what they're trying to prevent.
Meanwhile, we look at the Houston Texans and what's happening there. Cal McNair now apparently is being forced to apologize for using an anti-Asian racial slur at a golf event, which I don't think surprises anybody considering his dad was the one who once had the famous line about the inmates running the prison. It's not exactly all that thinly veiled. Where is your spidey sense on how the Deshaun Watson rumors about this possible trade and or his no trade list, it seems to me that this was all sort of ginned up by the Texans themselves. Am I wrong?
You mean the news that's come out over the course of the last week about the trade possibly happening?
Yeah. Like it sounds to me like this is all seeds planted by somebody there and not outside of there. All roads kind of lead back to stuff in Houston that maybe they think it's their best interest to kind of put it out there and see if phones ring.
Well, we've reported some stuff over the past few days that I can tell you, and I don't like to out sources one way or the other. I don't like to comment on sources, but it will surprise no one if I tell you that my reporting is not Texans-based, because they ain't going to talk to me, because I will stand up and say Jack Easterby is a charlatan and the team is dysfunctional, and I'm not surprised by what Cal McNair said. I'll be surprised when he says something out of character. What he said was completely in character, given his political ideologies and the people he'd support and the things those politicians have said in the past. It's the exact same line that the former president used multiple times in identifying the COVID-19 virus. So I believe that at some point the Texans kind of did a wink nod with Deshaun that we're going to trade you before the deadline. And I think that the planets are moving in that direction. Watson wants out. They want him out. Yes, they could hold him until March, but I think he'd like to get to a place where he can play football. And the risk they take is if they don't trade him, he could show up next Wednesday and say, hey, you know what? I want to play football. And I know I said I never wanted to play for you guys again, but it's my only path to playing football, and I don't think they want that. That's his leverage. I think they're going to try to get this thing done by next Tuesday. So while some of the stuff last week, like the John McClain report from last Wednesday afternoon, that he could be traded to the Dolphins by the end of the week, I felt like that was the Texans ringing the dinner bell for anyone else who might be interested. Yep. And if it was, it worked. Because the Dolphins have dibs, and if a deal can't be worked out with the Dolphins, the Panthers move into the – or they're in the on-deck circle. They move into the batter's box if a deal can't get done with the Dolphins.
I'm going to continue Bad News Wednesday by bringing up the Bears and Bucs game. What were your takeaways from it? Just it being one of the marquee games of the afternoon and then – just seeing once again what's going on with Justin Fields and that offense and how badly they lost to Tampa.
Well, you know, it's funny. You look at week seven, and we've been blessed with some great games and some things we could really anticipate, like the Thursday night game this week, and there's a Sunday night game coming up between the Cowboys and the Vikings. Next Sunday is the Titans and the Rams, which all of a sudden looks like a great game, but there really wasn't many great games week seven. And when America's Game of the Week, was it CBS or Fox? Fox always calls it America's Game of the Week. Well, if Bucks-Bears was America's Game of the Week, I weep for America for other reasons than what I've been weeping for America for over the past few years. It was exactly what I expected to be. The Buccaneers, even though they lost to the Rams somehow, they're one of the best teams in the NFL. And, you know, the Bears, I've thought all along, 3-2, they're not 3-2. 3-3, they're not as good as 3-3. And, you know, 3-4 is getting closer in line with where they really are. But they were shut down offensively, and they had no answers for a Buccaneers offense that, even with Rob Gronkowski gone for four games now, has been very, very dangerous thanks to the presence of Tom Brady, who had another four-touchdown pass game. He's had three or four already this year. He's tied with Drew Brees for the all-time record with 37. It's incredible. And, you know, they're going to be there at the end of the day when we figure out who's making it to the Super Bowl. And, you know, the Bears aren't. And, you know, maybe Justin Fields learns from this and it makes him better sooner than later. He's getting the reps. He's having the baptism by fire. But the flames were turned up on high in Tampa on Sunday.
The Bears get news that Khalil Mack's foot injury is not healing the way they thought it would. Reports from Ian Rappaport and others, Mike Pelissero, are saying that they are considering putting him on injured reserve. Ever since they made this move for him, Mike, it's been that one tremendous year, and then everything else has been interrupted by one nagging injury or another. And I don't know what the conclusion is, other than so many of these deals believed to be transformative can just be undone by the frailties of the human body.
Well, that's right. I mean, especially when you're talking about guys who are engaged in those collisions, in that scrum of bodies, that it amazes me that there aren't more serious injuries when you get those pretzels all crashing together. And it's amazing that everyone gets up after one of those car crash collisions. And, as a guy gets older, and as a guy continues to be in the fray like that, you always run the risk that there's going to be injury. And, you know, that's why when you're talking about really, really big money, quarterback is the best position to devote that kind of money to, because that is, with exceptions, because you need to know how to protect yourself, but the rules protect you and the circumstances protect you, and that's the position least likely to have these chronic injury issues, although we've seen it happen with several guys.
The Bears news was fast and furious, whether it was Khalil Mack, also the game, and then the note coming from Allen Robinson in their media availability yesterday, that part of the reason he and Justin Fields aren't in sync is understandably because they didn't get a lot of reps together in the preseason and in training camp. What were your thoughts on that? Just A, coming out the way that Allen Robinson said it, because he's not known for ever saying anything to particularly be pointed. He just stuck with the facts, and then also what those facts really indicate.
Well, and it's another reason why it was so confusing and confounding that the team was behind Andy Dalton as the starter, because when he's the starter and he's getting the first team reps for off-season program, training camp, preseason, those are all reps that Justin Fields wasn't able to get, and he's less prepared now than he would have been now that he's the starter. So, you know, as it relates to how he performs this year, it's going to be an incomplete, because he didn't get that opportunity to be the wire-to-wire from the end of the season, from the moment he was drafted to the start of the season starter. And he'll get that next year, and maybe he'll be a lot better off for it next year, but it explains a lot of things. And, you know, it's another reason why, and I know folks are going to want a new coach and or a new GM, but it's another reason why I think it's wise to give everybody 1 year with Fields as the guy from the start of the offseason program all the way until the end of the season.
Mike Florio, thank you. As always, look forward to talking next week.
All right, see you.
Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. When we come back, we need to bring back the interview that was done earlier today with Mully and Haw had on Rick Westhead, who works for the Sports Network in Canada. He is also a contributor to the New York Times. He has been on this story in ways that others have not, the Blackhawks story, and he has been standing on the tallest mountain screaming as loud as he can, why aren't people taking this seriously? Why don't people care? Why isn't this a bigger story? And I give him a lot of credit for doing that. He has been available for multiple shows on these airwaves. He was terrific earlier today. You're going to want to hear what he had to say, because we will bring that to you next on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
Bernstein and Rahimi, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Dealing with a lot of stuff today. Obviously, we have what appears in context to be some trivial but not unimportant news, that Khalil Mack may be going on IR, that the Bulls' Zach LaVine has a ligament tear in his non-shooting hand and intends to play through it, but it's not the story of the day. The story of the day is the release of the Jenner and Block report yesterday regarding the Blackhawks and what they did and did not do surrounding their one-time video coach, Brad Aldrich. And this is not an easy thing to deal with in any way, and we know there are a lot of complicated feelings. Appreciate everyone who has been texting in and being a part of the show on Twitter as well and on Twitch and the various modalities that we have. And, Layla, I know you were up late taking a lot of notes on a lot of documents. I went back and read a bunch of quotes from both Brent Sopel and Dan Carcillo and Nick Boynton about what players do, and I continue to be extremely bothered by what happened at the players' level, and it remains an unaddressed level as to what's going on. But these are not easy days, and I've told you for 25 years in doing this that the most serious stories are going to get the most serious attention on these airwaves to the best that we can do it, and we'll all kind of work through a lot of complicated and conflicted feelings that have changed over time and continue to evolve over time. I don't know that we're ever going to get to a point where it's satisfying and makes any sense, but I guess we're not going to stop trying.
No. I go back to the persistence of John Doe knowing that something needed to happen and there needed to be some justice served. And I think about that and how clearly forever it seemed like, reading that report for the duration of it, time and time again, nobody wanted to listen. And I think for us, our job listening and this uncomfortable feeling that we all feel talking about this, hearing about this, being mad about this is it's empathy, it's compassion. And instead of being mad at yourself for having it or guilty for having it, understand that that is human nature, and it's important to be upset for people who didn't have people on their side.
Rick Westhead has been on the right side of this for a long time. He is a correspondent for the Sports Network, TSN, in Canada, and a New York Times contributor. He was on these airwaves with Mully and Haw this morning with his thoughts on the legitimacy of the investigation and what should happen now.
I was skeptical. This is was an investigation that was commissioned by the Blackhawks, and others like the Athletic website have pointed out some of the conflicts that could be present there because of that connection to the team. And I've done a lot of reporting, as you point out, over the last months about how this has been handled. I think yesterday the Wirtzes did a good job with this. They followed through on the promise that they made. You know, that promise might have been long overdue back in the summer, to allow Reed Schar to go wherever the facts took him. And they could have issued a redacted statement or a summer executive summary or whatever yesterday. But I think putting it out in the complete form was the right thing to do. And, you know, the dust still hasn't settled. There's still accountability that's going to be needed from those, including Joel Quenneville and Don Fehr. You know, I've got more questions for Kevin Cheveldayoff, who's now the general manager in Winnipeg with the Jets. But, you know, at the very least, and remember, guys, after in the spring when this case was filed, the Blackhawks' first response again, they had not wanted to talk about compensation when Susan Loggins, the attorney for John Doe, was one and two, came to the team. They didn't want to talk about compensation at all. So the lawsuit gets filed, and the first thing the Blackhawks do in response is to say, we've already investigated this. We found that these complaints, these allegations, have no merit, so go pound sand. So the team has come a long way since then, and like I said, it was good to see some transparency yesterday.
Rick, I was disappointed in Stan Bowman's statement. I know he was allowed to resign. Basically, they did everything in sending him off, it sounded like, but give him a gold watch. I mean, they thanked him, and his statement didn't have an apology included. And I wondered if you think, could this be part of a legal strategy in that future litigation? They want to be able to align themselves with Stan Bowman. They may need him and his testimony and his information. And could that have factored into why the tone of his dismissal or resignation was what it was?
I'm with you. I saw that statement and, you know, saying, well, I was a first-year general manager. I'm not sure what that means. Does that mean that when you're a 38-year-old, you don't know to do the right thing in a case like this? You know, and even if in the moment during the playoffs of 2010 in May, when this all kind of came to the team's attention, you don't do anything then, okay. You wait for a couple weeks. You don't separate Aldrich from the team. You allow him to be around the players that he's abused. And then you allow him to your parade and give him a ring and set up a day for him to have a day with the Stanley Cup. And then that fall, you find out that he's now working with the U.S. team, the national team, a junior team, and you still don't say anything? How is that? I just don't understand what's going through someone's mind when they make the conscious decision to keep quiet.
You mentioned Don Fehr, the Players Association. So they were made aware of what had happened, and I think they were going to offer counseling, but I don't know that they ever did. But it didn't seem like even the Players Association, it doesn't seem like anyone came out of this looking other than, as we say, passing the trash.
No, according to the report, you know, another player on that team referred to as Black Ace One in Reed Char's report, says that that during the playoffs, when the Blackhawks were in San Jose, that Aldrich invited him to his hotel room, invited this other player to his hotel room, arranged for a masseuse to perform a sexual act on the player. And then Aldrich followed that up by sending him pornography in text messages and making references to the kind of relationship that he could have with the player. A confidant of that player went to Don Fehr and actually emailed, so there is documentary evidence of this having happened, and wrote in the email that the Black Ace One had seen a therapist now through the NHLPA, and the confidant said, you know, could we have a follow-up to talk about this? You know, as well, a confidant or someone close to, it's tough to follow this because some of these names are still confidential, but someone close to John Doe One also says that he went to Don Fehr. Don Fehr, when he was interviewed by these investigators, said that he didn't remember having that conversation. So, you know, the email is what it is. I mean, it's documentary evidence, and it shows that people at the PA were made aware of this at the time, and like so many others in this, did nothing.
It's a lot of shifting memories out there. You read a lot of these texts, a lot of inability to recall conveniently. And it's maddening. It's immensely frustrating. And I had a text from a friend of mine who, as he's listening, said, a phrase the Illinois Holocaust Museum taught me was the difference between being an upstander versus a bystander. There were not enough upstanders and way too many bystanders all over this case. And those words are ringing in my ears.
Silence is compliant.
Yeah, a lot of bystanding. And people say, well, what is somebody supposed to do? Call 911.
Call the police.
Yep.
How many times in these situations, these young players especially, young people are taught team, 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 team. That the team is their ecosystem. The team
family.
Is their life.
Team is family.
They need to be, right. They are plucked a lot of times out of childhood. to be a part of a team. And so they know that those people are their people. That's their whole life. And somehow the team authority overrides the law of the United States and the law of Canada?
Gets back to culture, gets back to the easy insular corruption of culture. And that is why serial abusers seek out these places. It's why they seek out college wrestling teams and a gymnastics federation and the Boy Scouts of America and the Worldwide Catholic Church. They know where they can thrive because they know where internal power structures will hold sway over external power structures. And we're getting the latest now on the next steps. This is Emily Kaplan at ESPN who just published this. Florida Panthers coach Joel Quenneville has a meeting scheduled with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman Thursday in New York to discuss his involvement in the Blackhawks sex abuse scandal. Quenneville said he addressed his situation with the team and said he didn't think it would be an issue because, quote, "I think we try to eliminate all distractions," unquote. Bettman is also arranging a meeting with Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff, a Blackhawks front office member in 2010. And in a statement on Tuesday, the commissioner said he would reserve judgment on both men until they get a chance to speak. Quenneville said, "I respect you all doing your job here and have your own questions here, but I won't be commenting further until my meeting with the commissioner." The Panthers host the Boston Bruins on Wednesday night. Over the summer, Quenneville publicly said he was not aware of the sexual assault allegations against then video coach Brad Aldrich in 2010 as Chicago was on a Stanley Cup run. So he clearly lied about that. And where are the Panthers in here? He should not coach tonight. He should not be coaching this team right now. He should immediately be suspended indefinitely at the very least by either the league or the team.
And the report details his stance on this. The report details not wanting a distraction.
He said it again today. To say it again, that all that does is further reinforce why he should not be coaching an NHL team right now. Someone has to step in and do something.
I just look over my notes too, the ones that stuck out from the report to me. And just the culture and how pervasive it was and how willing the denial was and how willing the bullying was for people to keep quiet. And also just the shame that the victims must have felt. The shame. Do not underestimate that being used against them. Do not underestimate why other people didn't know. Other people just didn't know. Because the people that the many people who he thought were going to have his back didn't. The Donald Fear piece of this, for some reason, is enraging to me. You are a players' association, and they're supposed to represent you. And you didn't even think to do anything. Your whole job is to try to have resources for people. And you can't even be bothered to do the right thing when you don't stand to lose or gain from this.
And when it comes to knowing about how to do the right thing, and I know we're a little bit late. We're going to come back. We're going to hear from the plaintiff's lawyer who Rick West had mentioned, Susan Loggins, in just a bit. But I want to relate this, and this is from our experience in hockey. I know that my wife is a founding member of the board of directors of our current high school hockey program. And she has made it clear to me that we were talking about this last night at home. She said, for me to be eligible to be on the board for hockey under the rules of AHI, and that is the Amateur Hockey Association of Illinois, she said, I had to take an hour-long online course on sexual assault, hazing, mental and verbal abuse, and more, and sign an oath that I report such behavior appropriately. Calling the police first was what we are instructed to do in every situation. All board members, staff, coaches, and any player over 16 must take this course. So for anybody who's texting in or saying, how do they know? How do they know? It's never been told. They do know, and it is told even at the high school level.
And you know what the difference between Beth Bernstein and John McDonough is? You know, and Al McIsaac and Jay Blunk. You know what the difference is? She is a person who is doing the right thing and doesn't have privilege and isn't bully running a hockey team.
Well, isn't also protecting a multi-million dollar industry.
And themselves, without recourse.
Yeah, there is a difference in the power base. There's no question. When we come back, we're going to hear from plaintiff's lawyer, Susan Loggins, and her immediate response after the press conference yesterday, finding out if there is justice done for her clients. That's next on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score. Bernstein and Rahimi with you on this Tuesday, following along on what is actually an extremely busy news day with news out of Hallis Hall regarding Khalil Mack and what the plans are for him. And now Blackhawks are reacting. Mark Lazarus is quoting various Blackhawk players, Connor Murphy, who says it was a very sad day. Your heart goes out to the victims. Alex DeBrincat also is weighing in on the difficulty of everyone confronting some of these things, especially the younger players who obviously weren't here initially when this happened, and they're being forced to talk about it right now. We're also waiting to find out if Joel Quenneville is allowed to coach tonight's game for the Florida Panthers. Meanwhile, Matt Nagy says no decision has been made regarding Khalil Mack vis-a-vis injured reserve or his immediate future. Yesterday, after the Jenner and Block inquest, the report results were released regarding the Blackhawks, what was done and what wasn't done. The lawyer for John Doe 1 and John Doe 2, Susan Loggins, appeared on The Score on the Parkins and Spiegel show with her first blush feelings, understanding what the Blackhawks are essentially now admitting.
Well, my first reaction was total vindication for John Doe. And, you know, I knew what the facts were, not just because of John Doe, but also I was present during a couple of interviews. So I knew that what John Doe said was correct. Not only did the sexual molestation occur, but that the management was told about it by Paul Vincent, the skills coach, and that a meeting was held among management in which they decided not to contact the police department, and also that they had sent this guy Gary down, who was a mental skills coach, to verify that this had happened. And he said in his statement to the investigator that he knew that it had happened and it was true. And I knew that this was a cover-up, that they decided to sweep John Doe under the bus in order to continue their shot at the Stanley Cup and win the Stanley Cup. All of that was not surprising to me. What I was really impressed by with the independent investigator is that they went further and found that there was a policy that the Blackhawks had at the time that required immediate investigation, and they swept that under the rug, too. I mean, this was a concerted decision on the part of management that this would hurt the Stanley Cup chances, so they were going to let it go. But what the public needs to understand is it didn't stop there. I mean, after they won the Stanley Cup, they then engraved this, or had the guy's name engraved on the cup, allowed him to take it home for a day in Michigan as a hero, which is where John Doe too got swept up. And they did innumerable additional events with John Doe one present, where he had to be present with his sexual assailant. Well, they just ignored that this happened after they already won. That's the thing.
With the 3-week delay, first and foremost, it appears that everybody who was in that room, Susan, no longer works for the Blackhawks. There are two people who work for other organizations in the NHL, Joel Quenneville, a coach, and Kevin Cheveldayoff, a GM. But it seems that everybody who was in that room is gone from the Blackhawks. Did the Blackhawks go far enough into their own organization at this point in removing people who knew, or did they have further to go, in your opinion?
So the answer is there were additional people that knew. There were secretaries that knew. There were other people that were made aware of it. Whether those people are still there or not, I don't know. Because remember, the Blackhawks blocked us in court from doing any discovery. So this is why I'm very cynical about them. So they conducted their own investigation through a really good investigator, okay? But they've been able to interview 129 people while we haven't been able to interview anybody. So I don't know who's still there or isn't there that knew at the time, so it's impossible to answer that. I mean, I think the thing is that it's undisputed now. This is the key point. It's undisputed that they threw John Doe to the wolves and totally deserted him in order to win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, people might say, well, this was a huge deal. This is our hometown team and all that kind of thing. But when you don't have morals, what kind of victory is that? You know, you ruin a person's life to do this. And I'm going to go back to the point that they wouldn't, the Blackhawks, have continued to act the same way. They acted the same way after they won the Stanley Cup, and they acted the same way when I called their lawyer prior to filing suit and asked them to do an investigation to validate that this happened and said we were willing to discuss it, and they said no. They just denied that it happened. So there's a certain amount of arrogance that has existed from day one that's a very unhealthy to everybody.
You contend, Susan, that the Blackhawks allowing Brad Aldridge to have his day with the Stanley Cup in the summer of 2010, am I right in saying you contend that that is equivalent to a job recommendation because that was in his town, this town of Michigan, where he ends up being a volunteer hockey coach and 3 years later assaulting John Doe number two?
Absolutely, because who would think that a known sexual predator would be given the Stanley Cup to bring home and be heralded as a hometown hero? If who would think that would happen for a known sexual predator? It would never cross anybody's mind. And had they done what their own policy required, which is investigate and report, this never would have happened to this child who this man admitted to molesting, who's now a registered sex offender. So, you know, it's the cover-up mentality. Let's not take responsibility till we're forced to do so today.
Once again, that was Susan Loggins on the Parkins and Spiegel show yesterday talking about the report that had come out of the Blackhawks' internal investigation regarding her client, John Doe, Brad Aldridge, and allegations that were made. And I want to point out just a couple of things as we get ready for Hub Arkish in a very welcome Bears segment at the top of the hour, is that the most disturbing details aren't just the ones of the encounters between John Doe, Black Ace One, and Brad Aldridge. It is also the threat and the abuse of power. And that's what this comes back to. That John Doe had to endure sexual abuse because if he didn't, he would not walk or play in the NHL again. That his safety was being threatened at every turn. And that once again, according to this report, and as Susan Loggins said, perhaps even more people knew in the organization, that once they found out about it, instead of reporting this to police, instead of doing anything about it to actually at least acknowledge what the victim was going through, who was a player working for their team for their precious playoff run in 2010, they decided that the San Jose Sharks were more important. This is an abuse of power. Hub Arkish is next.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.